We're going to look at the Bible together now, and we're going to look at Matthew chapter 2. And you can follow it on the screen, or if you've got it on your devices, or in a book called the Bible. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "and take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning. Rachel is weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted, because they are no more." After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who are trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. And when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee. And he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, that he would be called a Nazarene. Have you packed up Christmas? The tree gone. The cards. All the decorations. Packed up for another year. But I want to stay with Christmas. Just for one more week. Can I stay with Christmas one more week? Looking at the birth narratives in the Gospels. Last week we looked at Luke's account of Mary and Joseph. They visited the temple in Jerusalem. Jesus would have been about 5 weeks old. He'd been circumcised on the eighth day, and then there was a time of purity that Mary had to fulfill. So 33 days later, they took him to the temple for the purification rites, all in the law of Moses, and then to consecrate Jesus, to present him to the Lord. Which is wonderful that Mary takes the Lord to present him to the Lord. Lovely. And last week I asked you a question of, what are you waiting for? And in this new year, what are you waiting for? Or what are you waiting for? But this week I want to ask you a question, what are you looking for? What are you looking for in this new year? Now, this event that we've read about in Matthew's gospel takes place a bit later on. We're not exactly sure of the timing of this. It could be even up to 2 years after the birth. And we kind of come to that through the clues that we have in this passage. Now, we know that if you've got your nativity scene out, if that's still out, you've got a crowded scene with, you know, Mary and Joseph, baby Jesus, you've got the shepherds there and all the sheep, and then you've got the wise men. That's the normal one that we have. But we don't think that the Magi were there at that moment, okay? We think they came a little bit later on. The clues we have is Jesus is described here in the passage as a child. Luke, in the birth narratives, declares he's a baby. Because he was a baby, wrapped in swaddling cloths, lying in a manger. Here the Magi come to a house, not a place where animals are kept. And also Herod's response that we'll come to later, having heard the exact time when the Magi saw the star, he murdered all the boys under 2 years old. It's interesting to me to read Matthew's version of the birth of Jesus. He's quite succinct. One line. Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod. That's it. No census, no shepherds, no angelic hosts singing, no stable, no manger, no, just in Bethlehem, in Herod's day. But he does include a story that no one else includes, is the visit of the Magi. Visitors from the east. And what is Matthew saying as he tells this story? He's asking, what are you looking for? And why are you looking for it? Matthew is a Jew. He's Levi in the Gospels, the tax collector who becomes a follower of Jesus. He doesn't write this to satisfy astronomical curiosity, although we're all curious about that. He doesn't write it to complete our nativity scene. And we thought, that's lovely. It wasn't lovely at all. It was horrible. And Jesus was born into a world of violence and pain and struggle just like today. But Matthew includes this story. He also includes the story of the angel visiting Joseph in a dream and warning him. Did you notice that as we read the passage? There were several visitations to Joseph by angels in visions and dreams. Matthew includes this account because it is political dynamite. Now, we probably wouldn't think that when we read it. This is political dynamite. He drops a theological bombshell. And also, you know that he's an evangelist. He describes in this passage 3 responses to Jesus. There is opposition and violence and hatred. There is apathy. And there is worship. And those responses have been replicated throughout history and are replicated today. There is violence and opposition, persecution. There is apathy. Who cares? And then there is worship of those who have sought Jesus and being found by him. Matthew is saying that Jesus is king. That's the political dynamite, if you didn't. Jesus is king. He's not just king of the Jews. He is king of the whole world. He is king of the universe. That means Caesar is not king. That means Kim Jong-un is not king. That means Putin is not king. That means you can go on the list. Jesus is king. He is the Lord of heaven and earth. And he is the one who was promised over centuries. Do you notice that in Matthew's gospel? He's a Jew, and he's writing mainly to Jewish people. And he is reminding them again and again that Jesus was promised. Throughout the Old Testament, he was promised. How could they not receive him? What are you looking for? Think about what it means for Jesus to be your king, my king. What changes when we make Jesus king? And then Matthew would say, then come to him by whatever route you can, with the best gifts you can, and worship him. Give your life to him. And if you've given it once, give it again. We have a habit of grabbing our lives back. For his kingdom is an everlasting kingdom which will never pass away. That fulfillment of the Old Testament promises, Matthew is just littered with it. This happened to fulfill what is written. Isaiah 7, it took place to fulfill, a virgin will conceive and give birth to a baby. We'll call him Emmanuel. He will be known as Emmanuel, God with us. Micah 5. Out of Bethlehem will come a ruler who will shepherd his people Israel. Hosea, out of Egypt I called my son, echoes of Moses in Egypt. Jeremiah 31, Rachel weeping for her children. Matthew takes us back to Bethlehem after the visit to Jerusalem that Luke includes. And Bethlehem, that little town we sing about, had a long history in Israel. It's there that Jacob buried his beloved Rachel. If you visit Bethlehem now, it's surrounded by a huge wall, monstrous wall, security barrier, it's called. And Rachel's tomb, it's just surrounded by this wall, cut off from Bethlehem. Bethlehem is where Ruth met Boaz. You remember Ruth? Spent a good few weeks before Christmas looking at that wonderful book of Ruth. She met Boaz in Bethlehem. She was a Moabite. She came all that way. God's providence in it all. And through her line comes Jesus. It was in Bethlehem that Benjamin's famous descendant, David, was born. That's why Bethlehem is called the city of David. And Joseph comes from the line of David, from the line and the house of David. And when Luke tells us that because of the census that happened in the Roman world at that time, it was because of the census that Joseph took Mary to Bethlehem. It's astonishing to see how God works through history. When we think as human beings, we are organizing history, it's not the case. God is working his purposes out above it all. Because of the census, Jesus is there in Bethlehem. God worked it out from the very beginning. That promise of the prophet Micah, the Messiah, the king, the shepherd would be born there. See, Jesus, when he grew up, was known as Jesus of Nazareth. Have you ever heard him called Jesus of Nazareth? Matthew wants to state very clearly, yes, he grew up in Nazareth, but he was from Bethlehem. So that anyone who said, no, he can't be the Messiah, he was from Nazareth. No, He grew up in Nazareth, but he was from Bethlehem. See, I grew up in Brazil, but I'm from Grimsby. Which football team do you support? I was asked yesterday, and I should have said Santos. That's where I should have been born. But I was born in Grimsby, so come on, the Mariners. Anyway, enough of that. Matthew tells us that there was another king in charge of Bethlehem and indeed all of Galilee and Judea at this time. He tells us about King Herod. And we know more about King Herod from other sources. We know that he was not half a Jew, half Edomite. He was not born to be king. He was not a legitimate king. That's why he's so paranoid. He spent years scheming, double-crossing, murdering his way to the throne. What a contrast to King Jesus. He's only there because he's supported by the Roman authorities, and he dies in 4 BC. Now, I know what you're thinking. If Herod dies in 4 BC, when was Jesus born? Well, we don't actually know the exact date. We don't know the exact month, and we don't know the exact year. And due to sort of miscalculations by a monk in the early 500s, that's when they got the calendars sorted as we have them now. Because I'm not very bright. I imagined, Jesus will, it's year one, and we'll start from here. We didn't start that till about 500 plus. When a monk decided, now that's the new calendar for the whole of the West. So Jesus was born between about 6 and 4 BC. Sorry if that messes your head a bit. But it's not the important thing, okay? Don't leave here thinking, wow, that was amazing. No, don't hear that. Hear something else. That the most important event in human history took place in Bethlehem between 6 and 4 BC, as it was foretold. And his coming divides people even then at his birth, as it does today throughout the world. So who is looking for Jesus and why? There's different reactions. Herod and the Magi, they're the ones that stand in most strong contrast. There is hatred and opposition, and there is wonder and worship. But I just want to make a note of the apathy in between. As Herod finds out from his chief priests and the teachers of the law where the Messiah might be born, and they're all there going, yeah, me, I know the answer. Micah says it, he'll be born in Bethlehem. And they know so much. But they can't be bothered. Doesn't it fill you with astonishment that the ones who are waiting for him, the ones who knew the prophecies, just, they don't say, let's go. Can you take us with you? No. Now, I sympathize with them because I was brought up in a Christian home. I knew the stories of Jesus and I wasn't bothered until I was 19 when Jesus crashed into my life in a good way and turned my life around. But I wasn't bothered. I meet so many people who just, I'm not bothered. And I want to pull my hair out. But I have to remember, I wasn't bothered. So if you know someone who isn't bothered, and we all do, keep praying for them. and keep asking them to an Alpha course every year. And if they're 80 when they say yes and you've asked them 65 times, then that'll be great. But don't give up. I'm going off course here. So bring back. I'm astonished that they did nothing. And that apathy from these chief priests and teachers of the law, if you read through the story of the gospel, will harden into outright opposition where they cry for him to be crucified. Herod, the most powerful man in the region. I laugh when they say it on the news, when they say so-and-so is the most powerful man in the world. And I think, it's interestingly that sometimes those who are called the most powerful men in the world are the most paranoid and the most fearful and the biggest bullies in the world. He felt threatened, vulnerable to the claims of this new king, this true king, born to be king of the Jews. Herod's response was hatred, fear, and violence. Herod has a lust for power that's already seen him destroy most of the opposition, even in his own family. He was a monster. Could he have been so cruel to order the slaughter of innocent babies? Yes. Bethlehem wasn't a huge place. We estimate that must have been maybe up to 30 boys massacred. But that is nothing to what we see in the news every day. That atrocity in Bethlehem wouldn't have even made the headlines. He's already slaughtered the last surviving members of the dynasty before him just to make sure they didn't come back, the Hasmoneans. He ordered the execution of his own wife and three of his own sons because he saw them as a threat to them. And this is the man, Herod, that as he lay dying, he ordered the death of many notable men in Jerusalem. As soon as his death would be announced, they were to be executed so that on the news of his death, there would be weeping in Jerusalem. And then we have the response of the Magi. These people from the east, from Persia or modern-day Iran, Iraq, Gentiles, pagans. Magi were wise men, yes. They weren't kings. They were astronomers, astrologers. It's interesting to note that the word that Matthew uses, that the Magi said they want to come and worship Jesus. And the word that he uses appears other times in his gospel. In chapter 14, verse 33, when Jesus walks on the water, you remember that story? He walks on the water to the disciples, and they go, wow! And they worshipped him. It says in Matthew, they worshipped him. Not in the sense of they knew he was their savior and had died for them, that comes later, but he is something more than just a human being. And then after the resurrection, in Matthew 28, verse 9, the women meet with Jesus, risen from the dead, and they come to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. That is the implication here, that they're not just paying homage, they are worshipping. Maybe the divine. Now, the Magi. There's a lot of legend that grows up around the Magi. How many were there? Matthew doesn't say. We normally say there were three because there were three gifts. They would have had a huge entourage, I would guess. So we don't know how many. Do you know their names? No, you get the drift now, don't you? In the 6th century, they were called Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar. Is that right? Yeah. No. 600 years later, we give them names. But they were from a tribe of priests in Persia and Babylon. advisors to kings. And they had developed that study of the heavens and the planets to a fine art, giving each one particular meaning, believing that important events on earth are reflected in the heavens and vice versa. And they see a star. We don't know exactly what they saw. Is this a supernatural event or something that we can pin down in history? There's been sort of different theories. Halley's Comet, but that would have been too early, 1112 BC. There was a supernova, with a star which appears temporarily with extraordinary brightness, recorded in about 45 BC. There's a conjunction between Saturn and Jupiter around 7 BC. And in terms of their studies in that area of the world, Jupiter was regarded as a royal planet. Saturn was thought to represent the West and maybe that area of the Middle East, which is maybe why they come searching for the one who is King of the Jews. We don't know. And I was reminded this week that there was another wise man who actually came from Jerusalem, who was taken to Babylon, and who served Babylonian kings and Persian kings, who was actually elevated, a Jew elevated to be number two in the whole area. And his name was Daniel. In fact, it tells us in Daniel that he rose to be in charge of all the wise men. In Daniel 5, he's described as the chief of all the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. I just think that's brilliant. That Daniel, who loves his God, the one true living God, is in charge of all these other people who are into strange and dodgy stuff. And he has a vision of one like the Son of Man in Daniel 7. In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will never pass away. His kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. Daniel had seen Jesus. Now, I know I'm stretching it a lot for these wise men to have said, oh, you know, Daniel, remember Daniel? But who knows? Daniel was from Jerusalem. Let's go to Jerusalem, follow the star to Jerusalem. And notice that they go to Jerusalem, not Bethlehem direct. There wasn't a direct train. It was, you know, you had to go. And they journey. And it's astonishing and wonderful that these men would journey so far and endure such hardship to find the one that they are looking for. What are you looking for this year? What do you want to see this year? Just as an aside, if you've ever visited Bethlehem and gone to the Church of the Nativity, built in about 300 AD, one of the oldest church buildings still in use, incredible story. In AD 614, the Persians, who razed many of the churches to the ground in those wars, spared the Church of the Nativity. Why? Because there was a mosaic on the wall depicting Persian people in Persian attire. These magi. In fact, if you go there now, it's all been, well, you can't. But next time, you can see this mosaic restored fully. It's beautiful. These men from the east come looking for Jesus, and they come to Jerusalem first, and they bring their gifts, these prophetic gifts with them, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. I know the old joke, that's why we know there were men, because they didn't bring a cooked meal, nappies, or muslins, or anything else useful. Gold for a king, frankincense for a priest, myrrh for a suffering servant. They were looking for the one born King of the Jews. And this is the title, King of the Jews. It only occurs again in Matthew's gospel when Jesus is crucified. Pontius Pilate will have a sign written above Jesus as he's crucified. This is Jesus, King of the Jews. And the Romans will crown him with a crown of thorns. And they'll pay mock homage to him. But at the cross, King Jesus will die for you and for me and the sins of the world. And at the moment he dies, the heavens go dark. And by the time Matthew is writing this gospel, the Gentiles are flooding into the church. Whereas most of his Jewish counterparts don't want to know. Three responses to Jesus: hatred and opposition, apathy, wonder and worship. Is Jesus your king? If he is, what does that mean for you? And if he is, come and worship him and bring the best gifts you can to him. And if maybe for the first time you've never given your life to Jesus, why not today? Why not in this moment give your life to Jesus? The gift that he wants most of all. And we're going to come and worship him, who is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. There is no other. What are you looking for this year? Whatever you're looking for, look through Jesus first. Amen. Let's pray together. I'm going to ask Sally and the band.